copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Artists between churches and marketplace, that's my topic. Now, marketplace is a little bit a strange term, but we often use it when we talk about the cultural world. I would say the secular world, the not church, not the church, but the secular world where art, museums, concert halls, film theaters, jazz clubs, and so on can be found. Now, let us start with very basic fundamental questions. Why should Christian artists be active in this marketplace, in this cultural world? The term Christian artist should be explained at the beginning. I think it's important. It's a somehow fuzzy term. Does it mean that an artist is producing Christian art? Or that he or she is an artist who is a Christian? Or both? If we would decide that a Christian artist is someone who produces Christian art, then we would have to ask, what is Christian art? And here the problem begins to become even more complex. Fundamentally, art can be looked at and inquired into under three aspects: its origin, its form, and its effect or purpose. Now, there are many art pieces made for the church who are of high quality, who are not made by Christians. Let's have a look at this church by Tadao Ando in Japan. He is not a Christian. But it's Christian art, isn't it? Dorothy Sayers writes that Christian art should be the expression of a very personal experience. Now, quotation, quote, "Otherwise, it does not genuinely convey strength to us, but simply exercises power unto us." End of the quote. Now, this is Christian art should be expression of a very personal experience. Otherwise, it is exercising power over us. Now, this warning directed toward Christian artists is, of course, very important. There are, without doubt, magnificent and unmanipulative works of Christian themes, of Christian art, not created by Christian artists. Thus, this statement by Dorothy Sayer doesn't help us to define Christian art, I think. There are other artworks which are not referring to the Christian narrative, but they come out of faith and prayer. And they are communicating somehow God. Let's think of, we just discussed with Irek, who is an excellent jazz musician, and his family is on a high level jazz musicians. And with jazz music, he does not necessarily express something of Christian narrative when they are playing jazz. We created within our Crescendo ministry a book, Real Facebook, of hymns. And there we are referring to old hymns arranged for jazz. They could be that jazz musicians are using this kind of old hymns, but usually not. Or when you're playing an instrument, Mozart, Chopin here in Poland or whatever, it's not necessarily a Christian piece of art. But why not coming out of prayer, and while you are on the stage, something is communicated through your personality and how you're playing that You are Christian. You cannot deny it, and you cannot hinder it, that something is coming through to the Holy Spirit, to your personality. And there is another category, a too big one probably, of art pieces produced by Christians who think that their art is art, but it isn't. Now, to make complicated things simple, I'm using here the term of Christian artist in a very simple way. A Christian artist is someone who considers himself or herself a Christian and an artist, and who is reaching with his or her art a professional standard somehow, or trying to reach the best standard he or she can reach. Often the problem is that not that someone is not reaching a professional standard, but not knowing where the standard or the capacity is. In the music world, there are tragic stories of people who think that they can play the most complicated Shostakovich pieces and they cannot. And it's a disaster, but they could play a simple piece from another composer and it would be wonderful. With Kinderlieder from Schumann or whatever, it would be wonderful, but they strive for more, which they cannot achieve. So it's very important that we find our own shelf where to put the art on at our own stage. Now, the question, why should Christian artists be active in the marketplace? This is the first question. It is a fundamental question. You may think it's too fundamental and self-understanding that a Christian artist should be involved in the marketplace. Yes. And no, yet artists and also church leaders and theologians and church members, maybe even more than church leaders who have a certain academic level, are asking so. In the worst case, this question has already been transformed into two simple answers, such as art and culture is a non or even anti-Christ Christian field. Here the world is showing its seducing face where a Christian cannot follow any more Christ. But it goes straight away on the broad, it leads straight away on the broad way and not the narrow way. You maybe know this old picture, painting, very pietistic, of the broad way here and the narrow way here. This is the German version, the English version is here. Welcome here on the broad way. Welcome as well to the opera house, to the theater. So I think in the German version you see here the theater. Okay, welcome to the Broadway here in the Artist Network. Hector Berlioz, great composer, writes in his memoir that his mother was cursing him out of an over-religious spirituality when he decided not to follow the calling of his parents to become a medical doctor, but to become a composer. She cursed him, and this affected his life as a composer and his faith or his attitudes toward Christianity. On the other hand, there are some arguments which could help a Christian to follow the calling of an artist and become an artist. I would just address some of these arguments. The first one, the marketplace is a secular place, but it has many religious connotations. The religious connotations we see in the cultural world speak of at least two things. First, it speaks of the transcendent dimension of the arts. which we can understand theologically in the following way. Art is God-given. Charles was telling about this morning, and it is pointing back to God. Not because it is necessarily talking of God, but it has an intrinsic quality. Each aesthetic quality, call it beauty, but I think the term beauty is not sufficient. Charles, you were as well talking about this. Each aesthetic quality is pointing back to God or speaking in other than only human tongues. Each musician is religious, says the conductor Harnoncourt. I don't know if it's true, but he found that it is true. I have heard in Moldova, where I was at a festival, we had 2 days ago, 3 days ago, a piece of Bach, and it's not a religious piece. It was just a part of his Brandenburg concert, but it was so beautiful and it was so deep and it was so Christian. Now you can say, you know, Beat knows Bach was a believer, he knows his sacred works. But I think you cannot deny that there is something in some music which speaks of God in a very special way. Why would otherwise people go to concerts instead of churches or to exhibitions or to other art events? Because of this religious quality art has. Now, the marketplace is a secular place, but it has many religious connotations. And this means there's a strong element of almost, that's the second point, of almost religious adoration in the marketplace. There is the term Kunstreligion, art religion. Art religion describes this pretty well. When and how did it begin? Why is it still there? And almost a religious longing is there in the cultural world. We cannot go now into details. Just I would like to show you the slide of the art museum in Basel. This is the old part. We have now a new part as well, but it's shaped as a temple. And when you go, you enter into the temple court here, and you go then to the holiest of holiest when you enter more into the art museum. Now, modern temples, there are other modern temples as mainly football stadiums, we know. And there are priests, not the artists, but the 22 players, and the hooligans are adoring them or cursing the others, or when they are playing bad, their own team, and whatever. So interesting things are going on, which we can describe with religious terms. Now, actually, the Romantic epoch started to see in the arts the answer of, or the medicine of, for human and even political problems, and used religious terms. Especially, there is a book which is called "The Pouring Out of Heart of a Monk," and he, a monk who loves arts, is a very long title by the writers Tieck and Wackenroder, German book, romantic book. And there is a turn in this book where the monk is kneeling in front of the painting of Mary and adoring Mary, but then he starts to adore the picture, the painting. No more Mary. So we see in this book very, very well described the turn from religion towards God, towards Mary, to the turn of adoring the picture and the art. Now we see, there are amazing connotations today between art and religion. And in the culture there are bridges, or there are many, many references towards religion. And you could say this speaks of the deep longing of many artists to find something in religion, and it could help us to build the bridge. I don't know if you watched yesterday at the TV in your room the European Song Contest. And maybe you saw Madonna. Who did see this? Madonna. Okay, nobody. I like even to see the trash, and it was really trash, because we need to see the trash as well and watch it. This was the setting, the stage where Madonna came down. You know, in Israel, European Song Contest yesterday. It's a church. Then what happened? Madonna was kneeling, repenting. Here she is. Strange masks. It was a terrible, it was really artistically the Spiegel today. The German Spiegel was just saying it was the end of Madonna's career. Very bad. If she would have fallen down just the stairs, it would be better than if she would have sung. But she tried to sing. Okay, but then very strange things happened on the stage, and it turned into they were breaking down the cathedral or whatever. So we would have to watch it again to make an appropriate interpretation of the whole thing. But just showing you, there are many connotations in the arts field to religion. Now, we Christians might not like the fact that artists are considered as modern priests or doing such things, and that art museums or concert halls are modern secular churches and places to worship. But we should recognize that it is a chance to link or relink artists and the audience, the art world, with God. Saying this, I don't think primarily of a mission strategy, but of doing art with a deep awareness of the religious, we would say the Christian, the godly dimension of the arts, and be open as Christian artists for the wind of the Holy Spirit blowing through our art, because the marketplace is looking for religious dimensions. The second thing, and it leads to this, this marketplace is a mission field. There was a very famous, and still is, musician Doug Yu. I don't know if you know Doug. He was the principal of trombone at Boston Symphony. And he wrote many, many decades ago in the Christianity Today, I think this is the big journal in America, that the most forgotten mission field are the orchestras. Now, the marketplace is a mission field. Therefore, artists should be involved into this marketplace, into the cultural world. The marketplace is setting aesthetic trends, also for the church, no doubt. I wrote some 20 theses about art and church. If you don't have them, or if you were not here yesterday, some of you were not here yesterday, I have it here if you would like to have a copy of it. What would be other options in a marketplace with problematic tendencies as we described? And there are many other problematic tendencies, of course, with all the dark sides of the world. Now, options for Christians would be to give up art, to finish as musician or as a visual artist or as an actor or an actress. In Finland, in the 70s, there was a group of music students becoming Christians in the Sibelius Academy of Helsinki. And they were influenced by the church leaders, and they gave up their studies because they thought, we cannot combine being a musician and being a Christian at the same time, a follower of Christ. This would be the radical example of what Richard H. Niebuhr calls Christ against culture. I don't know if you're familiar with Christ and Culture, with this very good book published more than 50 years ago by Richard H. Niebuhr, the theologian, Christ and Culture. And he helps to categorize the different positions of theology towards a church, towards art, and one of these positions is Christ against culture. Now, artists could quit the art world and create art exclusively for the church. That would be another possibility. Just immigrate only the art into the church and let the field to others. Create, therefore, a Christian art. The third option would be to create a Christian subculture in the art world, to make Christian galleries, to make Christian opera houses, to make Christian things. So I was asked many times, or people approached us with Crescendo, could you, or could we start together a Christian opera company? Could you start a Christian orchestra, a Christian music school, whatever? Sometimes a Christian music school, there's a reason for this, but I don't think I don't believe that we should are called for creating Christian operas or Christian opera houses, Christian orchestras, because otherwise we are no more salt in the field. Another option would be stay in the marketplace as an anonymous Christian, and this is what many are doing, because there is some danger involved when you say, I am a Christian, and I am even maybe writing Christian poetry, or writing as a composer Christian music, or I'm singing a Bach oratorio and I believe what I'm singing. Whatever. Now, what does it mean to stay as Christian in the marketplace? There are four options. You are facing or even willingly stepping into opposition to some marketplace mechanism. You would then experience some exclusion. It could be that you willingly step into an opposition because you cannot anymore agree with what is going on the stage, if it's blasphemic, for example. You could face exclusion from other Christians, that Christians say, you cannot. How can you be a Christian and be an actor in the theater and play this piece? You could experience as well, and this would be something my heart beats for, being a part of an network, and we are here in this room to be networked on a Christian platform as Christian artists, and be at the same time in the marketplace, being networked and in the marketplace at the same time. You could experience inclusion through this network, some inclusion into the body of Christ, I would say, through the network, through the churches, and living out the transformative presence in the marketplace. Niebuhr has a category in his book, Christ Transforming the culture. And I would suggest this is a very good option. The second part will be artists in churches. Why should Christian artists be active in churches? The church needs the art and has to develop a stronger interest in aesthetics. There are several reasons. Out of dogmatic reasons, you know, one of the dogmatic statements was that the beauty, the good, and the truth belong together. Pulchrum bonum verum, and this in a Christian context has a strong influence in the marketplace. But the church should discover this and hold up that the beauty is part of the church life. Out of the missiological or missional reasons, I was talking about this some minutes ago. It means that the culture and the church can relate to the culture outside of the church, because it's speaking the language of the culture outside. Often the church is speaking another language than the language in the cultural world. I have a friend, she won the Swiss first prize of Swiss writers, poets. She is writing poetry. Now she told me, I quit the church. I didn't attend the church services for 10 years. And I asked why. Not because I'm not no more a Christian, not at all. She's a very strong believer. But I had to find my own language. And the language of the church interfered with my language as a poet. Now, I wouldn't suggest this to you, to follow this example and no more and quit the church. But it speaks to us that there's something which needs to be addressed. The church has lost its language, its modern language, and communicating faith in a modern way, even towards believers in the church. It would be very refreshing if we would find another language. We are not Muslims who stick on the words of the Quran. We have Bible translations. We use, and we have many Bible translations, which are very important. I don't say that the moderns are the best ones, but you know, we have to put as well on the shelf these different categories of Bible translations and use them in the right way and for the right purpose. But there are writers today in churches who are not asked to write things, for example, for liturgy, or composers, musicians. Many non-professionals are invited to do so, but why not asking the other ones or the painters to create in a fresh way, in a new language, the Christian message? Now, I can tell you of a composer I met while I was a teenager. His Swiss composer, Paul Burkhardt, he wrote musicals. He was a genius in writing songs. Actually, before musicals really got popular, musicals maybe only for two pianos, I wouldn't say in a Weber style, Andrew Lloyd Webber style, it was high quality. Then he became very famous because he wrote a musical, and in this musical was a song, "Oh My Papa, Oh My Daddy." Maybe some of you know it. He became a millionaire because of this. Then he bought a house outside of Zurich, moved to a village, and the pastor of the village approached him and asked him, could you play a Christmas piece, compose a Christmas piece for our youth group? Then he said, okay, yeah, well, start to read the Bible. And he read the Bible. He wrote a beautiful Christmas piece, a text, and as well the music. And the music, by the way, made it, two songs made it to the songbook of the Reformed Church of Switzerland today. And these songs are popular in whole Switzerland. And it's not pop music, I would say, it's really high quality. He said, I would try to find a new language for a Christmas play without kitschy costumes, no wings, no glittery costumes for the angels, no. The youth just come in their street clothes and they are performing this. Now in the premiere there, the top of the music world in Zurich was in this little village, in this church, Friedrich Dürrenmatt, name sounds familiar to you, this big writer and great artists were there in the church and were shocked in a way of the beauty of a Christmas piece. They didn't expect anymore that in a church would be good art, modern art. Now he wrote other pieces about the parables of Christ, about Joseph in the Old Testament, about Easter. Another example is Olivier Messiaen, the French composer, and he started to write liturgy as a French Catholic composer. He started to write liturgy for the concert hall. We shouldn't forget that in the Catholic Church there's a lot of art, of very good art, and don't be such stupid and say this is just idolatry. That's not true. It's great art made from believers who really are Christ-centered, as Olivier Messiaen. Now, we have ecclesiological reasons to embrace art in the church. We have to be faithful towards the heritage we have in our churches, and we forgot them. We have a responsibility towards the shape of the church today. We have to see that artists as well need the church, because artists often don't feel included in the church, not because their art is not welcome in the church. Maybe not so much, not so many artists try to find there a platform for their art. Maybe it would be nice and it would be helpful for the church. But they want to be part of a church and be respected as an artist. Not praised at all, that's not the point. But respected and not questioned in their calling to be an artist. I could tell many stories how artists say, oh, people in the church are asking me, what are you doing in real life? You know, yes, you are an artist, but really, what are you doing? Or another artist said, someone was drawing me, and showing me this picture which was hanging in the side room of the church and asking me now, what, you are an artist, on which way are you? And it was a rhetoric question, of course. I'm on the Broadway. So artists are longing for being respected in their calling and longing for as well having support through prayer, through encouragement in the church, because they need it. I was telling yesterday this about this passage in the memoirs of Per Olof Enquist, a great writer in Sweden who said he wrote that in the church of his parents they prayed for missionaries to be sent out to Africa. But why nobody came to the idea to pray for a writer as me? And he didn't become a Christian. The third thing, churches need the artists. They need their creative gifts, yes. They need their art. Would be very good to involve them. But they need them as well as bearers of special charismata. Artists are very innovative people. They are creative. They are prophetic as well. Often they are sharp thinkers and sharp observers of things, and they can sometimes in a very nasty way tell the truth. So if I would be a church pastor, I would ask once in a while, sit together with the artist and drink a tea and ask, what do you think about, what do you observe in my church? Or how could we be more creative and innovative? What would be other options? The church would be, if it doesn't embrace the artists and welcome the artists and embrace art, could be a church without art or with poor art. Now, churches are very good in finding reasons why not to include art. For example, they say we are word-centered. In this church, the sermon is the most important thing, and they say it and think at the same time the art is somehow like the vegetable when you have a steak on your plate. This is as well a Christ against culture position. Now the sermon is the most important. I recently was in a chapel, actually on our street, and I was in a funeral there, and it just only could photograph this scene from far away, and you see it a little bit. This is the only piece of art in the church, in this chapel, where a free evangelical church is meeting. Now what do you see? You see art, but you see Jesus preaching. Now you see art, and the only reason to paint art is because it's sermon focused. Jesus is preaching. And here are these people, and they don't look very transformed by this sermon. They don't look happy. They're just hearing the words. But Jesus didn't bring only the message. He brought the message of the kingdom of God, and he brought the kingdom of God. Healing, casting out demons, and so on, as you know. So this is an example of the sermon-centeredness even in the art shown in the church. Out of ecclesiological reasons, there's a minister-centeredness in the churches. All is focused on the pastor. But actually in the Reformed tradition, we have the priesthood of all. Why not consider an artist as a priest and a prophet? Out of cultural reasons, there's a lack of understanding or interest in this field. Absolutely. My favorite thing is to go, you know, to churches and photograph. In front of the churches, you have this sort of PR, boxes where, you know, the church is exposing itself and presenting actually what is happening in the church. And it's the PR of the church on the street. Now look how churches are presenting themselves. This is the art of this free evangelical church. Okay, there are some ladies or some kids who are doing this. And the other thing is would be this. You know, this is towards the street, this box. Oh, how do you say Schaukasten in German? Now this is a tragedy, you know, not to make a big thing of this, but it shows something. People, thousands of people are passing by day, and this is the picture the church is giving for towards outside. And it is art. You know, it's visual art. Name it, call it art or not. But it should be somehow communicate the aesthetic of the church, and it does. And it's a bad aesthetic. Monoculture. We have today a monoculture in the churches. Either it's monoculture of organ music or it's monoculture of worship music, of Hillsong. You know, but it's monoculture. There's a fear of open works of art. Umberto Eco was helping us to understand that each artwork is open, and it's an open process to understand art, and even the people in the audience are part of the artwork. And it's not so clearly defined what it means. Otherwise, it's not good art often. You know, it's a good sermon maybe, but not a good work of art. Out of practical reasons, there are no artists in the church. Yes, it could be a problem. There are no finances, no possibilities for art. But see the early church, by the way, they had no finances, they have no trained artists. They had no possibilities, big possibilities to show it, but this is the art of the early church. Now we could compare it with the Greek art, with the heroes of the Greek statues. And you could say, what is this? But go to a modern museum and go to the wing where the expressionists are exhibited, and you would see similar paintings when you see this. This is very expressive, and actually it's good art. It's maybe not the best art of this time, but it's art. This as well, very expressive, and the Greek art didn't reach this level of expressivity. This is from the Catacomb of Priscillian Rome. Now another option could be that a church is welcoming art, but it's outsourcing art. And there are many churches doing it. Now they say our church is building is open. Now the symphony orchestra of the city can come and play. But it would not really link the artists with the church. I don't say that it is bad to invite once in a while the symphony orchestra of the city to the church, but it cannot be the strategy to do it and the only strategy. It would mean to lose artists. Now, what does it mean to stay as an artist, a Christian artist in the church? I think a Christian artist should develop some virtues. Firstly, patience. We have to be patient with the church. We cannot change the church and the aesthetic of the church from one day to another. But nevertheless, we shouldn't give up and be patient, but be stubborn at the same time. The second virtue would be humility. Resisting against the star cult and helping non-professional creative people to use their art. The third virtue would be a willingness to be actively involved in the church. And let's say I'm the artist, I don't need the Bible study, I don't need the prayer group, I go to my atelier. No, willingness to be involved, and the willingness as well to be questions with the artwork and step into in discussion about the art. Maybe take a group to the atelier and allow questions, maybe as well very critical questions, and start to explain what is the meaning behind the painting, and as well question yourself and think of doing it better or whatever. Let's maybe think about this more during the next days about this subcultural thing. Thank you so much. Thank you for your attention.